Okay,
one
no,
hell of a wake up call. I don't think you would get
if the two largest oil importers okay, in the United States were to cut
it,
off.
Then we might do it.
Yeah, come on, but let's
if,
be honest.
But
here.
If there was some slack on either side, I think that what we have done, right, is what the elite have done is created a diversity in our resource portfolio, so that if Venezuela quit selling us oil, which would kill them more than us, right? It would hurt them more than it would hurt us.
It would it? It's 2 o'clock in the morning right here on 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio.
You don't think it would?
If
they weren't getting our scratch, well, Venezuela, you think they could just
my point here is this: is if Venezuelan oil was sold in rubles or euros or something else, that would contribute dramatically to the decline of anyone's need to have dollars. That would be very injurious to the American economy.
That's always been one of the arguments. What's propping up the dollars? The goal is the oil being sold in dollars. That's one of the arguments.
I really think we would invade Canada, absolutely, if they stopped selling us oil. Because Venezuela and Canada, I mean, that's where we get the majority of our oil. I know we like to talk about how we get
Canada
all this.
I think Canada is the
number
one
strategic oil
technically
reserves.
The one, but yeah, Venezuela is probably right under that.
I think Canada is probably number one, but Venezuela is definitely number two. Venezuela is the most, they have more oil than any other country on the planet. I mean, you know, come on, we use more oil than any other country on the planet. This is not that hard to figure out.
All right, so damn it, what's the deal? How do you have the most precious resource on the planet and the highest murder capital and people roaming the streets because they don't have stuff? You see what I'm saying?
Oh, no, I do, yeah.
That is an insanity. I mean,
well, if the resources were exploited for the benefit of the people, which I think was Hugo Chavez's
point,
yeah,
that's what
idea
he tried to do.
Yeah,
but it clearly did not work out.
But here's the thing,
and why didn't it work out? Because he had too much opposition. Because you know, there's elite in Venezuela,
right?
You know, was it too much opposition from them? Was it meddling from outside influences from the West like us?
Well, I think from the get-go, it's going to be the outside influence just because, well, A, you got to go back to, damn it, why are they even, why
they
do they speak Spanish?
Money,
right?
The whole time it's sabotage.
You know, you join the story midstream and it's already one of exploitation. It was not it's not like the native Venezuelan people, like pre-European.
Or are we talking about, so is it...
So that elite had already been established, so that when oil was discovered, it was a matter of their elite trading with our elite or our wildcatters.
So are we the reason it didn't work out...
You know what they called them, wildcatters? The oil...
People looking for oil?
Yeah, maybe. Okay.
So is it because the people of Venezuela, is it because the elites in Venezuela or other elites, you know, meddling and preventing this from happening, or is it the limitations of... You know, centrally controlled socialism trying to remedy poverty because
because they were met with opposition from the get-go. I mean, that wasn't even an option for that to actually happen, for that to unfold. You know what I mean? Because go back 400 years, right, to the point when there's like, whoa, there are resources here, and we weren't even talking about oil. They were talking about their forests or their whatever. Right,
it's 2 o'clock in the morning right here on 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio.
I don't even have to know the natural resources of Venezuela, other than what I've looked at on the map and see that it is a shoreline country that has a lot of beachfront property, which I'm sure looked good to the conquistadors. You see what I'm saying? So from the get-go, there was this imbalance because the people of power were euphemistically trading with this new land, and they were taking, you know, they were coming in, you know, killing Indians.
Sure.
Right? And so you're dealing with this warped trading posture that means that the people who live there are always going to be getting the short end of the stick, because first off, they're dealing with resources that they can't really make anything out of. So let's just say it was just oil, and you go, okay, this is like the world's most great thing. You have dilithium crystals, but you don't got a warp drive, and you don't have the first clue about what to do with it. You know what I'm saying?
You bring up an interesting question, an interesting point, Mike, in the sense that it's interesting to look at how, you know, you have the United States, and yes, we revolted from the British, but then there's also Canada, who was still under the crown for quite a while, and neither Canada nor us are nearly as impoverished or even close to impoverished as Central America.
But that's because we killed off our indigenous populations and largely made it a European thing.
Is that why?
You don't think so?
Because of...
We killed off the indigenous population.
You guys just talking over each other.
Tremendous amount more of someone's income down in South America and Central America.
What is about people's income in Central and South America? What did you just say? I didn't understand it because you guys are talking.
I'm saying that whereas something might cost us 10% or less to buy certain consumer goods, if we need like a consumer electronics things like a computer, they're going to end up paying 10%, 20%, 30% of their income for this thing.
Proportionally, if they want to go buy a DVD player, it's going to be like half a week's pay or whatever. I get what you're saying.
I'm referring to them not setting it even like that's at the bar
not,
of no. bar.
Guys, that's not
by
the
cost. I'm referring to them setting it $50 to $100 more than what even we pay.
The price of a DVD player is not why the people in Central America are poor. The reason why is they don't have land. You got to remember that in the United States of America, over 100 years ago, you know, people lived on farms still, were generating their own wealth based upon agricultural lifestyle. And before that, the United States, the West was won by homesteading. If you went out and decided, I'm going to go out and improve this land, any white male could go get it.
Right. And 400 years ago, this was my point. 400 years ago, conquistadors came over and said, this one here is part of, I don't know, was that Spain?
Spain, yeah.
Right? So they come over and they say, this is his, and this is his, and this is Sir So, and this is Sir Lancelot's land, and they cart all this up, and then they have their agents come over and run it, and meanwhile, they're intermixing with the people or whatever, so that you do have this racially, ethnically, that's even detail. Culturally, well. You have this mix that is unique down there. It's not a European bunch of Europeans, but it's a bunch of European descendants.
The elites, right? The elites are certainly European, very European.
I mean, that's the same thing next door where the guy got elected and they're like amazed because he's black and Indian. Yeah. And it's like, how the heck does it become amazing that an Indian gets elected in an Indian country, right? It's because the deck was stacked so early, and you're absolutely right. That means that way back 400 years ago when Sir Lancelot, just to whatever, got this tract of land, from day one, all the wealth and resources that were being generated were being siphoned off, and the people who were doing the work were getting a crack on the back, right? And they were being forced to work the land or being exploited or whatever. And then you take off the blinders and you look here 400 years later and you go like, well, why the hell can't these people get their act together? Well, that's why they can't get it together. And then we haven't stopped manipulating the situation it's like taking candy from a freaking baby for 400 years. That's what we've been doing.
But, I mean, some of it has to be centrally planned socialism as well as part of the problem. You know, I'm a big fan of decentralization. So,
no, I'm with you.
Centrally controlled socialism has its limitations. I think that's the key. But when you have a situation where, you know, I don't even think it's the 1% down there. It's like the 0.01%. And we're talking about a very small minority of people who are in, you know, there's no middle class. I mean, we're talking about a very small percent of people who are very much in control of everything. You know, I mean, it's kind of monopolistic. I don't know how you would then give those people, you know, economic freedom under that. Because socialism is not economic freedom. You know, and we're talking about, you know, an ability to lift people out of poverty. I don't know that socialism necessarily is the solution.
But much there. Like affirmative action is not the solution, right? In and of itself and all of that jazz. Already there is a problem that exists, so there is not, and there is no perfect solution, because you can't just undo the problem. You can't, like you said, you can't just go. If it has evolved in such a way that this 0.001% or whatever mega minority, can you be a mega minority? Whatever super minority is in control of things, how do you break that up other than to do it like, I'm the guy who's going to decide that we're going to redistribute this wealth.
I mean, how do you do people? That? That's a very good question.
And once you start down the line of redistributing the wealth, then here in America, you get people who get real, real antsy, and they will finance, right? They will finance a coup in Venezuela. Remember that?
Yeah. No.
And they took, they kidnapped.
Venezuela's got a lot of oil.
Chavez. Well, they, for like a week.
They told him to get on the plane because they had lunch waiting for him. And then I think the plane took off and took him to another. And they're like, why are we leaving Venezuela exactly? Yeah, I think that's
right.
They tried to trick him.
And well, but I'm talking about when they actually put him in prison. And help me out here, Drew. 2004?
I thought it was 2002.
Okay, somewhere down. It was early. I remember that they... There was an actual coup. They were like, this is the new president of Venezuela. Kind of like they're doing, like Russia's doing.
They never put Chavez in prison, though. I don't think he was in prison.
I thought he was in jail.
I don't think so.
And that they had to release him because the people were, like, marching the streets.
I'm pretty sure he got on a U.S. government airplane, and they took him out of country. And they took him to Mexico.
I know they did that with the guy from Haiti.
I think he was still in the country, actually, at the time.
Yeah, it doesn't... I mean...
I thought he was under arms, but it doesn't matter. What is critical is that when someone starts talking about redistributing the wealth, people who have wealth, like the United States, and have interests, like business people in the United States, who, you know, you talk about those elite are dealing with our elite, and they know that if our elite, that is, know that if their elite disappear, then the whole thing gets, you know, their easy money gets upset. Not even to mention the fact that if we, the people of America, look up and see this kind of thing, and I'm not arguing for socialism, I'm just talking about local control. If them people want to be socialists, let them be socialists. But if we get out of it, then we can see. See, and that's my problem, is we never get to see whether or not these systems will work. To look at the Soviet Union and say that that's a proof positive that socialism doesn't work is kind of naive, because that wasn't socialism, right? That was something else. And anytime, well, you know, I'm with you on the decentralization, but that the problem with the Soviet Union was centralization. It was Russia running a Soviet or running the socialist empire. It was a Russia, it was the RSSR, really. And if it hadn't been that, then maybe it would have been, if it had actually been some socialist republics that decided to, you know, have common defense and that stuff, but it might have been something different. But that's not what happened.
But what we mean by socialism, we're talking about centrally controlled economies as opposed to economies that are controlled by what is known as market forces.
I frankly think, in general, I mean, especially now with the resources we have now with green, and you can kind of work something off without the having to be stuck to a main manufacturing base, I think decentralization would do everyone a favor, and especially bringing back, as you said, Mike, our food system back to being local. We can thank White Castle for starting that whole food.
You want to name somebody?
Well, no, White Castle basically started it.
Started what? Fast
that,
food?
That whole big machine of like really centralizing the food system with all that stuff and burgers and, I mean, like these animals in one place. It was, I mean, look it up. It's largely credit to the credit of White Castle.
And while that may be the case, it was just the one that got around to it. I don't disagree.
But I will say it's not doing us any favors. We get better food and just better product. People be healthier and all sorts of other things.
Yeah,
I would argue
the strains of our vegetation or our food would be stronger, healthier.
Well, I mean, if you're looking at something that's what 30 to 40 miles away or less, you know, you don't have to worry about, you know, freezing this food up. I mean, you don't have to waste all this energy with food methods, waste all these resources.
Do you
so
know
you
what,
can
though?
Take something
but,
all the way from California or Hawaii or Chile or some ridiculous distance.
So, Drew, you don't like eating avocados, pineapples, mangoes, you know, apples all year long, oranges.
That's the problem, is that stuff's
strawberries.
Awesome. But at the same time, we lose things.
Bananas.
There's a, you know.
I mean, the list can really go on. I mean, I agriculture that's local is good.
Would we even know what a kiwi
looks like if we
relied on local?
You know, it's what's really unfortunate, what's something I struggle with, is farmers markets are awesome. Farmers are awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're great. I can't feed my family realistically going to a farmer's market. It's not a reality for me. For one, I can't afford to eat the way I want to eat and shop at a farmer's market. I mean, I'm sorry, I can't. And two, I'm so far away from that agricultural life that my ancestors left a long time ago. The idea of eating canned vegetables and fruits all winter long is not something that I could grow accustomed to. I'm not saying I would starve if that was the only option before me, but there is something to our agricultural system of food being affordable and plentiful. I mean,
the problem is the way they're doing it is we're heading down a path where it's already
headed down that path. We're already
right.
there.
It's
we're
not
so here.
Quality.
So here, how do we turn it around?
It's
and
dangerous.
Right, I hear
and
you,
here's,
Drew.
Here's your solution oriented.
But I like mangoes, man. Do you like mangoes?
Well, I'm referring specifically now to the GMO aspect more than anything in the Roundup.
Right.
But I'm just saying that when it comes down to it, do you like mangoes or not? Do you like the idea of being able to go buy a mango?
But let me float two things for you here.
Drew doesn't like mangoes. He's not answering the question.
Because I do.
What were you going to say? Why?
I do like the variety of fruit. I mean, I love mangoes, as a matter of fact. That's one of my favorites. Like orange,
mango,
banana, you're knocking it out the park, right? But here's the thing. And this is truly a question, right? Because I heard this guy talking the other day on one of the KKFI speeches. I think it was like alternative radio or something, but he was talking about this concept of Tina and Lois, right? Which is there is no alternative Tina, right? This mindset that says, you know, this is where we are and really you can't change it, right? Because it would be so problematic to shift the way we do things. And then what you can do, Lois is this locally owned, I can't remember the full acronym, but it was basically the idea of substituting your imports. Okay, so that if we looked locally, at, this goes to your decentralization point, right? Like if we seize control of the Kansas City government, right? If we as a community decide that we are not going to, you know, rather than, say, pass a gun legislation that has no real effect, right, to say that what we're going to do is look at what we as a community import, right, and reduce the imports with substitutions of local operations, right, that we could start to wean ourselves off off of that centralized globalist mindset and reality, right? So that we would start to see what it's like to have an intense and vibrant local. Now, my question about the fruits and whatnot that you're talking about is, now don't we have the technology that we could do that? That we could grow.
I know there's someone around here who actually has here. A cacao plant.
I mean, we have the capability. Because I was like listening to my wife talk to her parents the other day and explain to them like how you can take an old storm door and make a greenhouse and grow tomatoes all year long.
Well, you could actually use geothermal energy and you could off shunt what's normally the thermal pollution concept that geothermal
right.
is supposed to
I mean,
talk about.
All I'm saying is that if we put our minds to it, we could do some amazing things. I learned something tonight that amazed me when you told me, because I happened to be looking at my map, and when you tell me that they go from Libya to Italy with a pipeline underground, that means that in the face of, well, probably wasn't in the face of all that much turmoil since the empire connections were there, but we can do amazing things as human beings if we put our minds to it. And if we put our minds to these sorts of things, you could do it without revolution, without upsetting the economic apple cart completely, but affect that change. Because that's ultimately what you're talking about, right, is the decentralization, not just of, now this that doesn't go to your IRS and the tax dollar, but it does go to lessening the control of the outside on your economy.
Well, but it's, if you have political decentralization, then you won't have to deal with the issues that are the side effects of economic centralization.
But that would require some political decentralization, which
clearly, but
you hold your people accountable.
It's just if you as a corporation have to lobby 10,000 different localities,
right,
and 100,000 different politicians as opposed to one locality and 535 politicians,
right,
you make it a lot more difficult to control the game,
right, which is why they don't want Hugo Chavez and his nonsense going on down there. They want to make sure we keep those elite in control, because it's a hell of a lot easier to buy that oil for 10 cents a barrel, whatever, from one guy instead of having to negotiate between, guy who can put a pump in the ground.
You look at the situation with South and Central America, and it's just a principled stand against giving people, economic to give them the economic benefits of their natural resources. Because if you go, okay, we'll give the Venezuelans a better cut for, various reasons of, we'll say, we have to now invest the profits of the oil that is owned by the state back into the state through education or business development or infrastructure development, which we all know stimulates the economy or whatever it is, then you set a precedent and you're going to have all different types of political movements in the South going, oh my God, look at how this benefited the Venezuelans by them saying that they weren't going to, submit to these policies of, economic, intimidation and terrorism, anymore.
Well,
you have to be as a Western elite opposed to it at all costs. It's the same mentality that Walmart has when they're like, we can't let one store unionize and we would shut down our most profitable store.
Right.
In the face of unionization.
Because it's that idea.
Because we can't let that happen, that one thing, and then all of a sudden it's over. And then everyone wants to unionize.
Well, the big joke about that is the fact that it probably costs them more money. I would argue it's actually cost them more money to fight these unionization efforts than it would be to just accept it.
Right, but the point is they have a principled stand against unionization.
Right.
So they were willing. I mean, it's almost to the point where
cut your nose off to spite your face.
Right, or the company would kill itself to prevent itself from being unionized. I mean, that seems a little extreme and hyperbolic, but maybe it's possibly true.
Well, if they weren't trying to screw over their employees, look, I'm the first to admit if I set up a corporation, I wouldn't want a union telling me what to do, but I wouldn't be trying to screw over my employees to begin with.
Well, right. But I think if there is decentralized political power, you know, then you don't have just the ease and just comfort of just being corporation goes into lobbying, lobby goes talk to a couple of people on Capitol Hill, it's done. If right. you have to lobby and deal with all these different, you know, levels of politics, then, you know, corporations won't be able to operate the way they do so intrepidly, so streamlined and so efficiently. They'll have, I mean, and, you know, that will have all kinds of effects. And most people would say, oh, if corporations aren't as efficient, they're going to raise prices. Well, actually, what will happen is you'll have competition again, which would be great if we could have mm-hmm. more competition in this country. And that's what really brings me back to this notion of the Bolivarian Revolution and these concepts, is that what you ultimately want people to have is fair competition. Competition to go out, if I want to entrepreneur, you know, myself into this, or if I want to, you know, change the way this industry works, or I have my invention, or I have this idea, you want that to be, you know, the competition not to be between who's got the largest lobbying, you know, fund, or who's got the most powerful corporate intelligence, but who's really got the best damn ideas.
Right.
I mean, that's really what and that's been the struggle in this country, is because, you know, we have unbridled capitalism almost at this point. I mean, it seems, you know, we talk about regulations, the federal government does, but I mean, clearly most of us acknowledge that, you know, corporations wield way too much political authority and power to the point where we have this situation of too big to fail corporations, which is anathema to a free market society. Right. I mean, corporations should have every right to fail. They should not be protected entities.
And to your point on that, yeah, in competition, this is why we don't see as many innovations come out. We see the stagnation, let's be honest here. We see it in places where there isn't as much competition, but there's more competition than we expect. We see this with movie companies. Look at the stagnation of Pixar.
I don't
know. They're a joke compared to what they were as a company.
It means that.
It's the truth, though, Mike.
But it means it means nothing. It means absolutely. Who cares about the stagnation of Pixar?
Well, I'm saying that this is an example of a company resting on its laurels, not producing new, different product.
Okay.
They're franchise. They have these franchise out Cars 2, planes. I'm just giving it as an example.
But okay, well. Fair enough. Drew, we'll leave it there, sir. You have a good day, and we'll talk to you again in the future.
Yeah.
All right, bye-bye.
Drew, you are all right with me, buddy. He's calling all over town complaining about Pixar.
I know. He does it all the time.
Pixar, GMO, and Korean hip-hop. Those are the things that...
That food thing is really important, though, and I think we can't lose sight. I mean, I don't think that Monsanto should own every seed company in this country and should be trying to genetically modify and patent biology. I don't think they should be able to own life legally. I think that seems completely ridiculous. Some things should remain in the commons, if you will, and one of those things should be the genetic material that is in life, human beings or plant life or animals or whatever. That should not be something that can be owned by a corporation. And you only get a reality like that when you have a situation like we have in this country, where Monsanto can just go talk to our senators here in Missouri.
Right.
You know, I mean, if Monsanto calls Claire McCaskill, she says, "Good morning, Monsanto. What can I do for you today?" You know, if Monsanto calls Kit Bond, he goes, "Good morning, Monsanto. What can I do for you today?" I mean, come on. I mean, that's just the reality of that situation. You know, and there's,
I think Kit Bond retired, so he now works for Monsanto.
Not Kit Bond. I meant to say he's the one making Roy Blunt.
The call. He's like, "Hey, Claire."
Right. Now you're right about that.
Well, I guess
he can't do that yet.
He's got to wait a year or two. His wife is doing it.
No, it's been enough time. He's outside of the window.
I hope I don't get hit with like a slander lawsuit because of that.
But you know, you can go to the extreme with this, and I, you know, if I feel like I I will pay money for mangoes, and I'd like to have the ability to buy mangoes. I think everyone should.
Right.
I don't think that I'm the only one that should get to buy mangoes. I think everyone should get to buy mangoes. And it's like this scarcity thing, and people want to say that we should go back to a local diet, which is a nice idea, you know, but we're so incredibly far away from that, and it would be such a transition for people to make. I don't think they fully realize what that would entail.
But everything has to be done gradually, because that's the way it was done.
But, I mean, can't we acknowledge that there's been some benefits to the way agricultural is advanced in the last 150 years? I think there's some real benefits.
Absolutely. That's why I say it would be great if we could, and I think we could, like, locally produce stuff like that now.
You can go to the Kaufman Butterfly Garden, and they have several different citrus trees that they keep inside their little greenhouse area in the – so they have this really cool structure. You've been there before. They have that cool structure that you can go sit in, and they pull these plants in during the winter months, and they take them outside, and you see, okay, so they're growing citrus. And they look a little funny, and I don't know if they ever ripen up. I mean, and you got to wonder, at some point you might spend more energy trying to grow a mango tree – in Missouri, then you would actually...
Yeah, there just ain't enough volcanic ash in the soil.
And it would not be nearly as tasty.
To make it the same. No, you're right. You're right.
But, you know, on the flip side of that, my wife went to a TED Talk that was part of a nationwide...
Ted Casey?
Well, it was TEDx, but it was simulcasted.
Oh, okay.
She was watching a video screen at the Nelson.
Sweet.
And it was about food, and that's why she went, because she's very interested in food. And... you know, locally produced, you know, urban agriculture. I mean, that's her thing. And part of the discussion was about using bugs as food. And
I've heard that.
The hippie chick that's like going, hey, you know, and it's like, if we're going to eat crickets because they're really high in protein and they're really replenishable and they don't have any known diseases, I mean, Americans aren't going to want to eat crickets just for the sake of eating crickets. So we gotta figure out a way to get the Americans to eat crickets. You know, like, just, I wasn't there, but, I mean, it explained to me. I get this condescending.
Ooh, chocolate cockroaches.
This hippie chick going like, yeah, Americans aren't open to the idea of eating bugs. So we have to figure out a way to entice them to eat bugs. So we made bug cookies. So it's like, chick is doing a presentation where she's making cricket cookies using cricket flour. You know, so cricket flour is like essentially, I guess they're
flour with crickets mixed in.
They're drying. No, these are gluten free. So they're taking crickets, I'm assuming, that are dried, and they're milling them into flour and then baking cookies out of that.
So they're crushing crickets.
I'm never going to eat a cricket, Mike.
You might eat a crushed cricket if you didn't know.
On accident, goddamn right. I might do it on accident.
Would you like some peanut butter cookies, sir?
No. What's in those cookies? I ask people every time I get offered a cookie now. I make sure they're bug-free. You know, I mean, we've all inadvertently eaten mouse poop and bugs in our lifetime. Anyone that's ever had a container of something that opens up and has a lot of air and a little bit of chips in there, you've eaten some sort of bug part before. Let's be honest here. But I'm not going to knowingly do it. I mean, if it gets to the point where I'm told that for my protein intake and for the benefit of the environment and everything else, I need to eat a bug. I don't come from that country. I'm not from that country where it's normal to eat bugs.
All I'm saying is,
and
put
those
the recipe in your back pocket.
No, I'm not.
For a rainy day.
No, hell no. I'm never eating a bug, man. If my wife, if I come home one day and my wife is making cricket cookies and saying, come here, honey, we're going to have almond milk and cricket cookies because it's sustainable for the environment, I'm going to start smoking again in the house. I'm going to buy a carton a day. I'm going to smoke as much as I can inside my house and blow it all in my children's
face. Get all Dennis
Leary on them. Because it won't matter at that point.
Right.
You realize, if I'm eating bugs to stay alive, who cares about emphysema and lung cancer?
Arsenic.
It does not matter.
Okay? That's crazy.
I don't come from that. I'm not from that culture. You know, I don't think it's okay to eat dogs either. Some people think that's totally fine. I don't eat dogs. Hey, some people do.
I'm
God
just
bless
saying
those people.
That apparently
I'm not going over to their house
cat
for dinner.
Problem in KCK, Waco. So
we could eat those. I mean, do you remember years back? Because when they redid the dam Brush Creek and they turned it from what it used to be to what it is now, which some parts of it are acceptable, most parts of it are just, I mean, it's like, why are we trying to make a sewer pretty? Something wrong about that. You know, but what happened was they created the standing body of water. And all those freaking geese that used to come in and leave.
Right, hang out.
The geese would come, fly through, hang out for a little bit, poop on the sidewalk, and go. Now they don't go. Now they just stay. And they put up these signs like 10 years ago saying,
don't feed them.
Yeah, help keep the wildlife wild. And it's like, why are we pretending like this is wildlife?
Right.
These are pests, you know? And right, I mean, what's the difference between a Canadian goose and a rat? A couple of wings. I mean, it's really what it is. Those things poop everywhere. They're nasty. They're, I mean, just, I can't stand those damn Canadian geese.
But here's
geese.
The thing. Would you eat a rat before you'd eat a geese? A goose?
Well, no, but up in Weatherby Lake, which is up in the Northland, right? That's up by Parkville. You know, it's one of those private lakes that they had such
shoot the goose,
they had such a problem with the Canadian geese that it was, I mean, it was poisoning the lake. The lake was getting E. coli contamination. So they're like, they started killing these geese, and they're like, what should we do with them? Maybe we give them to the homeless shelter. They make goose dinner, you know? And I don't even, I don't even think you're supposed to eat Canadian geese.
That's like an elite, that's like an elitist thing there.
For sure.
It's like, these pests are bothering me. Let's feed them to the homeless. They probably really did say that, right?
Absolutely. It really makes me angry that we pretend like the Canadian geese that live in Brush Creek are somehow wildlife, or we're supposed to, you know, go, ooh, look at nature. Those aren't, that's not nature. I mean, it's like nobody looks at a bunch of possums and go, wow, possums, you know, look at them. Are they eating my feces or somebody else's feces? Right. Nasty creatures. I mean, because there's a real problem. I mean, you know, with wildlife invading, you know, the cities.
Well, I think it's more the cities invading wildlife.
But
yeah, I'm with you.
No, but you have booming populations that are way out of whack of animals like deer, because there is so much leftover food, and raccoons and fox. I mean, you know, 2 years ago in South Leawood, you had coyotes eating people's chihuahuas, and they had trained snipers going into Leawood, Southern Leawood, to kill these coyotes so they'd stop eating people's dogs. You remember
see, once
this?
Again, though, that's and the, that's human, and the city animal going into country.
The Animal Rights Act. Well, it's the nature of the way the nature of the cities leaving all this opportunity for animals to eat outside of nature. To you know, instead of, you know, that coyote tracking down or whatever a coyote eats, the coyote is now way outside of its normal territory, tracking down Burger King or chihuahuas or something.
So do you suppose that there will be a like a diabetic raccoon problem or that kind of thing? You think
we'll start
hearing about that?
People,
you've got to start tying up your trash.
The raccoons
are eating your Twinkies.
There's definitely
killing them.
I mean, there's raccoons in my neighborhood. I see them all the time, and some of them are a little messed up.
Right.
There's the Gillen Park fox.
Why is that raccoon limping? He's got gout.
No, for sure.
I'm talking about me. Actually.
He's got poor
circulation. Wait a second.
He's got poor circulation from his type 2 on, you know, adult onset diabetes. No, absolutely.
Over the Hedge 3. That's one of those Pixar.
Yeah, shout out
cartoon
for Drew.
Movies.
if only we could innovate our digital animation more, you know. That would be it'd be a good thing, wouldn't it?
Wow.
not to hate, not hating.
That's just I don't know. I just went into some weird places with all of that, but it all boils down to.
Well, we're going to take
the
a quick break.
Crazy.
We got some things to play, so we're going to take a brief break, a little interlude, and we'll be right back after these messages right here on the Paragon Radio Program, 816-931-5534.
Johnson County Meals on Wheels is looking for some volunteers. If you are interested, please contact them at 913-715-8895. This message, a public service of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Have you had to advocate on behalf of a loved one with a chronic illness or potentially fatal condition to get them the care they needed? If your loved one is incarcerated, the barriers to getting them proper care are almost insurmountable. 9 a.m. Monday on Jaws of Justice Radio, We talk with family members that are struggling to help their loved ones survive incarceration. Oh, and we will be taking your calls, too. Jaws of Justice Radio, Monday at 9 a.m., right after Democracy Now!
Support for KKFI is provided by Californos in Westport. Presenting on Wednesday, December 18th at 8 p.m., the Girls of Westport. Live singing and drag with a holiday twist, featuring Loretta Martin and Krista Collins, the current Miss Gay Missouri. More information and a full calendar of upcoming musical and special events can be found at Californos.com.
Here we go, down to the four people store. One, two, and three, and four.
So did you hear that Daryl Forte is hanging out in Israel with the military over there?
I heard you saying that earlier.
I mean, this is all coming from Tony's KC via Chief Forte's Twitter page, at Chief Forte.
They do it, though.
The Israelis?
Yeah.
They don't play. No,
well,
don't play.
And you know what happens is, and this is more of that decentralization that you talk about, not to pour into conspiracy theories, but, you know, they get federal money, you know, grants and whatnot.
Who, the Jews?
No, the police departments to send their people for this training. You know what I mean? It's not like, I mean, because people would be outraged if you know, Forte turned in a, you know, $5,000 expense report because he went to Israel to
go
learn how to round up suspects and how to, you know, do midnight crashes or whatever they do.
Or midnight skinny dipping in the Dead Sea.
Yeah, that's right? The Congress parties. Yeah, no, because, you know, that's what that's what they're exporting from the accounts that I've heard is the way to, you know, bag and tag populations.
Oh, Israel?
Yeah. Because, I mean, that's their thing is, like, they've got...
An Israeli company just got a pretty big contract from the DHS to build watchtowers along the U.S.-Mexico border. They're good at that. They like to build walls and watchtowers and various other things like that.
It's so crazy.
It's not that crazy. Did you see that the guy in Florida who shot the other guy for texting in the theater? You remember this story, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't even, the movie hadn't even started.
Yeah, and he had to get up, go get his gun, and come back.
Yeah, you know what he was doing before he entered into this altercation with this other movie guest? He was texting.
Was he?
That's what court records are now showing. They got his cell phone information, and they found out that literally while he was watching the previews, he was texting. And then apparently...
I'm going to turn off my texting now. BRB, or no, I guess not B, a TTYL.
Oh, yeah, if you say so.
P.S. If everybody else doesn't turn off their texting machine, I'm going to shoot the bastards.
I mean, people
I mean,
are
it's like, it's
people
over
are so
when
crazy.
I say it's over, damn it.
People are so damn crazy. I don't know what. It's this cowboy mentality that everyone having a gun, walking around, you know, just being quick on the draw. And it's like, you're not supposed to, it's really not a good idea to kill people.
Or maybe that means it was something other than the texting thing. What
yeah,
were
no,
the
this,
other,
this guy was crazy.
What were the other dynamics involved?
His own personal insanity, I think, is really going to be the...
That's going to be the key.
That's
going to
be the focus of the prosecution, is that this guy is Looney Tunes. I don't care what he used to do.
But
he
that might, in no way
he
means,
might be a formerly decorated, you know, retired police officer. It does not matter.
But that in no way means that people should not be allowed to wear pistols as they walk around the streets.
God, it's so creepy, isn't it? I got nothing wrong with gun rights. I really don't. But this idea of concealed carry,
put
I just...
Put it away, man. Put it away. It's there for when you... See, because we were talking about that earlier about the whole... Because I was thinking... I was kind of answering my own question. Because when I was saying, like, so, like, if America wasn't there to stop the onslaught of, like, blah, blah, blah. Like, okay, so somebody rages across. Ain't nobody coming here and doing that because we got guns in every house. Or enough. You know what I mean? We don't need them walking around the streets. Just the fact that they're here, we can do the keep and bear arms thing. It's not walking around. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Yeah, to a degree,
I mean,
yeah.
If I'm not worried about us being invaded by... Did you see they remade Red Dawn?
They did?
Yeah. It's craziness. North Koreans... Can they afford a plane?
Exactly.
they
have a lot of counterfeit dollars.
They were paratrooping in, and they were, like, rounding up Americans. I'm like, that ain't happening. That's like a mouse swallowing a whale or whatever that thing goes. You know what I mean? There's no scenario, even if Russia and China back North Korea. I don't see North Koreans airdropping into a Michigan town and taking it over. But anyway, that was what I was thinking about. It's like, even if there was some, quote, superpower out there, it would not affect us in the sense that we would
you know, we can maintain our borders, and then we just need to trade and do our thing, and then people will be addicted to our freedoms, if that's what we actually focus on, instead of like projecting ourselves out militarily. But that was a complete non sequitur, sorry. You just wanted to know what the weather was, didn't you?
What is the weather?
Schizophrenic. It was 70 degrees on Saturday and then like 35 yesterday. Well, it got a little warmer than that.
I'm not ready for it to be 75, 80 degrees already.
Liking it. I was liking it Saturday afternoon.
It should be, you know, 55 degrees.
It
sunny.
Did catch my baby boy. My baby boy is getting a cold because, you know, he had to fight with him to tell him that he couldn't wear shorts to school one day this week because it's like, dude, just because the sun comes out. But then it reminds me that I was like that when I was a kid.
Yeah, all kids are like that, aren't they?
Yeah.
Wear the least amount of clothing possible. It won't matter if, you see, there's an article from the Wall Street Journal, which was, that used to be a newspaper. The article is entitled, "The Future of Brain Implants. How soon can we expect to see brain implants for perfect memory, enhanced vision, hyper normal focus, or an expert golf swing?" I mean, this is where we're at. I mean, this is the brave new world.
Right. I'm going to see Michio Kaku.
You're going to go see him
Tuesday.
Speak?
Yeah, I'm going to go see him Tuesday over at, I can't remember where they moved it to. I think it was going to be at Linda Hall Library, but it got too big for that. So, but I'm going over there to see him. And I heard him in an interview talking about the brain implants. He was talking about something like a brain pacemaker for Alzheimer's patients, that they can actually implant memories in your head, right? So, like, they would be able to, like, every hour on the hour, I get a sudden thought. My name is Michael T. Justice, and I live at KKFI. You know what I mean? So that if I find myself...
Yeah, but that's the first
leg of
it.
Michigan somewhere, I go like, whoa, this ain't right. I better...
But that's the first step of it. You know, you're going to give it to people who have, you know, mental issues or have some sort of...
So I knew you would have a different view. Because, like, then you... And I'm with you.
No, that's what this article says. That's most people... Eventually neural implants will make the transition from being used exclusively for severe problems, and they will be adopted by people with less traumatic disabilities. When the technology is advanced enough, implants will graduate from being strictly repair-oriented to enhancing the performance or healthy or normal people. They will be used to improve memory. Think Ritalin without the side effects. Perception and mood. Bye-bye Prozac. This is, you know, so we're talking about perfecting the imperfections of human beings using, you know, implants.
No, absolutely. It's crazy. When you think about what they're, yeah.
Some parents are willing to let their children take Adderall before a big exam. The chance to make a super child, or at least one guaranteed to stay calm and attentive for hours on the end during a big exam, will be too tempting for many. Even if parents don't invest in brain implants, the military will. A continuing program at DARPA, you know, is using cutting-edge technology, supporting work on brain implants to improve memory to help soldiers injured in war. Who could blame a general for wanting a soldier with hypernormal focus, a perfect memory for maps, and no need to sleep for days on end? I mean, this is, you know... This is the future of things. This is probably some of the scariest crap ever. I don't know, is this or Ray Kurzweil's idea of uploading us to a computer, you know, hard drive somewhere? I mean, which of those is scarier?
Or the melding of the two? I mean, because that's what you're... Because, see, I'm looking at that and I'm thinking, okay, they're talking about reducing the military, right? Because we really don't need... We don't need it.
We don't need it because we have drones and robots
right.
now to fight our wars.
Exactly.
We don't need human
and
beings.
And then what you just said, I look at that and I go like, well, yeah, man, if a general could just like go like, we don't need
all of these troops. We just need this handful here and hype them up so that they're ready to go when we need them to go, and they'll remember what we need them. I mean, it'll be kind of like, I've only seen pieces of it because sometimes it pops up on one of the cable movie channels. That it is a pretty bad movie. Battlefield Earth, I think that's the one with the John Travolta movie where he was. It's like the book that L. Ron Hubbard, the founder of that Scientology thing, had written this novel, this science fiction book before. But anyway, there's a scene in there where the guy, the human who's been through generations dumbed down, finds this machine that these aliens use, and like, bam, he suddenly knows all kinds of stuff. Like, he just, like, instant learning.
Right,
and
that's one
of the
things
they're talking about with these brain implants being able to do at some point in the future. Because you got to remember, there will also be the problem that the silver oxide that they use in the neurotransmitter causes cancer, so the guys blow up after the first time, or some other such thing that may derail this. So I don't want to get too...
Oh, there's going to be lots of guys who will sign right up. I mean,
oh, yeah.
How many people are willing to go to Mars already? I mean,
right.
There's people planning. People, I saw something about people who are already practicing. They're, you know, somewhere in the West.
Yeah.
They're in Nevada or something like that.
But that's the human.
And they want to go. Condition. They know they'll never make it back. They know once they get there, they're probably, their life span will be very, you know, I mean, but they're.
Think about people who are willing to go on a 6-month or 4-month journey by sea to some place called Virginia, and you knew you probably weren't coming back. You know what I mean? That's all you're looking at here is people ready to go. Or in the words of the old Schoolhouse Rock, elbow room, all we got is elbow room. You know what I mean? People want to expanding. There's always going to be that element that are like more than happy to get the hell away from you guys. Mars, sign me up.
That's disturbing. There's something that's law.
Brain
I mean,
junkies.
We've done
be happy
this
to get inserted.
We've tried to do this chemically for some time now, but people need to remember that it's imperfections that make us who we are. You know, our inabilities to do certain things or on the other side, our abilities to do certain things are what makes us individuals. And the obstacles of life, like unhappiness, and there's stress, depression, or the other side of that,
right.
Happiness, enjoyment, pleasure. You know, when these things are done organically. I mean, there's value to them. It's part of the spiritual experience.
Part of the human experience, right.
I mean, it's just, and to look at these things, for technology to go, we can change that. We can put a chip in your brain that will, help you remember everything you've ever read ever before.
But here's the thing, man.
We're going to insert Google Glass into your brain.
You like mangoes. Once it gets there, and you experience that, then people aren't going to want to give it up.
I don't even have a smartphone, Mike. I'm not going to.
But no, what I'm saying is you don't want to give up your mangoes because you've experienced them. You never experienced a smartphone. I dare say,
I've experienced
I'm not going to let you see mine, but I'm